I'm Saruti.
I'm Hannah.
And this is Red Handed. And today's episode is dedicated to our brand new patrons.
Woohoo!
That woohoo is well earned because this week, Friday, we launched Red Handed Patreon. And we have patrons. And you're listening. You're them. This is crazy. And then Hannah and I went out to celebrate on Friday night. It was basically all everyone had to listen to us talk about. We harangued our friend, who is now going to be designing the t-shirts for our lovely Folding Club member Patreons, which is very exciting. He has been explicitly told no red boob hands, because that's where his mind went first.
All he was talking about was how we were going to have red boob hand t-shirts.
He's a legitimate clothes designer for a living, Tom Butler. No red boob hands. You've been briefed. It's not what the people want.
We'd like to say thank you to some of our patrons. So do you want to kick us off?
Patron number one, you were straight in there like a shot as soon as it launched. Double A. I did tell Hannah I had a little joke about this. Double A, after last week's episode.
Are you making a boob joke? Is that how low we've stooped? No red boob hand t-shirts and no boob jokes.
Oh.
I'm sorry, you can have your boob joke.
No boob jokes.
I thought you were going to make a battery joke. I thought you were going to make a double A battery joke. And I was like, where?
What would be the battery joke?
I don't know, something awful.
Never mind, moving on.
Then we've got Linda McGurk, who actually put a really lovely post on the Facebook group as well. So thank you very much, Linda. We really appreciated that.
Absolutely. I remember Linda's post. It was, come on, guys, for the price of a cup of coffee a month, give them some money.
Yeah.
So thank you, Linda.
The way you're gesturing, you were like, come on, tell me about it. Like,
I know. I don't know why I was doing that accent. I don't know exactly where Linda's from, but that's what we're going to go for. And then next we have Marina Hogan. Marina, thank you so much.
And Rebecca Manners, who also
How polite.
Some money. How polite of you to give us.
She is polite.
I'm sure she's heard that joke her entire life, and we've probably just made it worse.
I know, it's terrible. And then we have our very first Mahogany Folding Club member who joined, which is Vanessa Mertz. So Vanessa, also check your messages. I sent you a little private message on the Patreon as a thank you and asking for your t-shirt size. So let me know, please.
But it will not have boob pants. Sorry.
It won't have boob pants.
So there are loads more patrons and we will read out your names in upcoming episodes.
So stay tuned.
Yes, yeah, stay tuned. And a majority of you will be listening to this episode an entire day early. So hello from the future.
But with that, we're going to stop that there. Thank you very much, guys. And next week, we'll also go back to adding in the reviews that you guys leave and also back to everyone's favourite feature, which is social media of the week. Back next week. So today we have a real puzzler for you because we wanted to give those brains a workout after we got your stomachs churning so much over the Halloween festive period. And this case, as Hannah will testify, really annoys me because I don't have any answer. So perhaps we're hoping we can crack it as we go. So let's get straight into it.
I've genuinely been like banging my head against a wall with this one. I have no answers.
Yet. Maybe we will crack it.
You're right, I'm being pessimistic.
Or you guys will crack it in the Facebook group later. Let's get straight into it. So our story today starts in the town of Tingley. Tingley? Is that how we're saying
it? I really hope that's how we're saying it.
Should we just carry on saying it? Yeah. In the town of Tingley, West Yorkshire, Northern England. In this town, there lived a couple, Sigmund and Lottie Adamski. The pair were originally from Poland and moved to the UK in 1960. They moved here to start a new life. And Sigmund quickly found work as a collier, or coal miner. But their lives weren't easy. And in the 1980s, coal mining was suffering a decline due to mechanisation and privatisation. And Lottie was also diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. This sadly pretty much left her completely housebound. But still, everyone who knew them described them as a happy and hard-working couple who had assimilated well into their small town and into rural life.
So this perhaps makes what happened next all the more shocking. On the 6th of June 1980, 56-year-old Sigmund left his home on foot to go pick potatoes, which seems like a completely normal thing to be doing of an evening. The couple had their goddaughter's wedding the next day on the 7th, so they were entertaining guests that night, and what's a celebration without potatoes? And as a person of Irish descent, I can tell you, there is zero parties without potatoes. So the weather was good and Sigmund was off. And on the way, he even stopped to have a chat with a neighbour on the mile-long walk to the potatoes. But Sigmund would never be seen alive again. And that was that. For almost a week he was missing, and 5 days later, on the 11th of June, in a locked-up coal yard in the town of Tomorden, which was 20 miles from where he was last seen, atop a 12-foot coal pile, his body was found.
Can I just interrupt quickly? So, Todmorden, if you look at it, it's spelled written down. We don't know how to pronounce it. And I know we're British, but still. We're going to go with Todmorden. That sounds very English. But written down, it's Todmorden. And my German friend told me that that translates to dead murder.
Fuck off.
Todd means dead and Morden means murder.
Oh my God.
I mean, she said it made no sense, but the literally translates the German.
So it's like double dead, basically.
Basically. Fact dead. Thanks, Gloria.
Trevor Parker, the son of the man who owned the coal yard, arrived at 3:45 p.m, ready for the afternoon shift, where he saw Zygmunt's body lying there on top of the pile of coal. Shocked, but probably thinking, or hoping, it was just a drunk, he called the police, and PC Adam Godfrey arrived at the scene at 4:10 in the afternoon. Parker told Godfrey that he had been at the yard that morning until 11 a.m, and Zygmunt's body had not been there.
He said that after his morning shift had ended, he had locked the gates and left, saying that no one, to his knowledge, had been there in those 5 hours in between 11 a.m. and 3:45 when he came back. Now, we'll come back to this, so just put a pin in it. Before we come back to it, we first need to check in on the state of Zygmunt's body. It was quickly found that Zygmunt had died of a massive cardiac arrest, but due to the odd circumstances surrounding his death, plus several odd findings with the body, the police suspected foul play. Now, firstly, there were second-degree burns on his back, neck, and shoulders. And covering these burn marks was a strange gel-like substance, like someone had tried to treat these injuries while he was still alive. But he'd been missing a week. Where had he been that he'd sustained such severe burns and had someone try to heal them? And why? Also, there are no pictures of these burns, but many of the reports say they were circular. But obviously with no pictures, we can't totally.
The definition of a second degree burn, according to my mum, who is a nurse, that's if it blisters on contact, that's second degree.
Mm-hmm.
If they're circular, are they just fag burns?
No, I think they were quite bigger than that. Considering how they were explained, it was like circular, because some places described them as like rectangular. So it's not like fag burns, they're like blocks of burns on his back, neck and shoulders. I think if they had also been cigarette burns, wouldn't they just have described them like that? So there are no pictures of these. So like you said, we can't be totally sure exactly what they look like, but there were burns. There were these quite severe burns on his back. And next, the thing that was really weird was the way in which he was found and the overall appearance of the body just doesn't seem consistent with death by natural causes. For example, take how his body was dressed. It was clear, probably, that someone else had dressed him. His coat was buttoned up the wrong way, his shoes weren't tied properly, and his belt and trousers weren't even fastened properly.
And his shirt was missing. He was just in his vest and coat. So why was he ever naked, and why had someone redressed him? When you research into this case, there's a lot of hype around the fact that he must have been dressed by someone unfamiliar with dressing. So what do we mean when we say unfamiliar with dressing? It's such a weird turn of phrase.
What do we mean by that?
Well, we'll come back to it. What kind of a thing or a person might be unfamiliar with dressing? But really, it is quite hard to redress someone, especially if you're in a hurry and the person is dead and you've potentially just killed them. I've been dressing myself for, let's say, 21 years. When do you stop dressing yourself? When you're like 6?
Yeah.
I have gone to work wearing odd shoes before. It happens.
Shut up.
Yeah,
what?
It was awful. It was bad.
How?
I was like, I just broken up with like a very serious boyfriend and I was a mess. And I went to school. Oh. When I was a teacher, I went to school with odd shoes on. And I didn't realise until I got off the bus and walked through the school gates, talked to the principal, and then got into my classroom and realised that I was wearing odd shoes. And they were like bad odd shoes. Like one was like silver and sparkly and one was blue and beaded. Yeah, it's bad.
Were you on drugs?
No.
Imagine if you'd have died that day. Someone would have said that someone had redressed you,
well, exactly,
who was unfamiliar with the art of dressing.
exactly.
Oh my God, how weird.
So my point is, these things happen.
Got your point.
Especially when you've just been dumped. Another strange point is how spotlessly clean his body apparently was. He'd been missing for a week, but he was freshly clean. His face had also barely any stubble, so it's about a day's worth of growth. But how is that possible, given that he'd been missing a week and that the autopsy revealed that he had, in fact, died between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. on the day he was found? So let's remember, he's discovered at 3:45. So that's, what, an hour and 45 minutes? Yeah, so at least he's on top of this coal heap for an hour and 45 minutes. Further weirdness, there's no coal dust on his clothes or his skin. So it would appear he couldn't have climbed up to the top of the coal heap on his own.
But what was interesting was that apparently the coal was like compacted processed coal, like what we'd buy for like a barbecue. So it's not like the raw stuff straight out of the pit. Like I know what I'm talking about coal, but not straight from the pit, more like barbecue ready. I don't know. If you touch like barbecue coal, it doesn't really get on your hands.
It does a bit, but not like loads.
And the reports from the police at the scene of the crime said that there were no footprints or disturbance of the coal pile at all. So who got him up there?
But the ambulance had arrived first, and because they were first responders, they would have rushed to help Sigmund. So how could anyone tell whether there was a disturbance or not? Because obviously they're going to be walking on the coal. So I don't really buy that they can be like, oh, and it was this perfect pyramid of coal. Like, no, it wasn't, because the first responders would have gone straight up there. And also, that's kind of like saying, oh, the pile of rubble was completely undisturbed. Like, how can you possibly know that? It's a pile of coal.
I know. So I think we're pretty much both in agreement that the argument that no one could possibly have put him up there because the coal was undisturbed is pretty rubbish, because, like you said, how could they even tell? And even if they could tell, it was already disturbed by the paramedics. So that's one thing that we can rule out, is that we can't say that nobody put him up there. Another quite chilling fact is that Godfrey, the police officer at the scene of the crime, as well as the coroner, both said that Sigmund's face had been contorted with fear. They said it was almost like he had known great pain or fear before he had died. But he died of a heart attack. That must be terrifying and painful.
Yeah, definitely. That doesn't necessarily mean that someone murdered you.
No, exactly. Ah, yeah, like, he was having a fucking heart attack. I assume that's painful and terrifying. So I don't buy that, whatever. As in, I don't buy that that necessarily proves anything other than that he's dead. But what else did the autopsy reveal? Because this is really important, and there's even more weirdness. So Sigmund had eaten well the entire time that he was missing. So this man was missing for 5 days and showed no sign of malnutrition or any prolonged dehydration during the time he was gone. But at death, his stomach was empty. So except on the day that he died and was found, he had been eating well. This, on top of looking clean and well-shaved, all of that, where was he all week?
And there's even more. It was found that the burn marks on his back, neck and shoulders were inflicted 2 days before his death.
I just don't get that. It's so weird.
So he's gone missing, and he was well fed and kept and cleaned and shaved and eating and all of that business. And then 3 days after he disappears, he's severely burned, but still while he's alive. And then it looks like someone's tried to heal them by applying gel onto these wounds. But oddly, during the autopsy, the gel was examined by the Home Office lab, and it couldn't be identified as a cream or gel in common use. So could it have been some sort of homemade concoction? Because there's also no record of his visiting a local hospital for treatment. It seems like weird information for the Home Office to release if it's this, like, unknown substance.
I don't know. Unknown, and there's a lot made of this on the internet, that it's like, oh my God, it was this mystery gel-like substance and nobody could identify it and we just had no clue what it was about. And, you know, I want to say that in the 80s, maybe they just didn't have the equipment or the techniques necessary to figure this out. And that was going to be the kind of easy argument. And you see that argument out there a lot while researching this case. So people either will say, oh my God, it's this mystical gel. Or people will say, no, it wasn't and we just couldn't identify it. But I looked into this, and the mass spectrometer, which is the equipment that you would use to identify something like this, was invented in the 20s, as if the Home Office didn't have one by the 80s.
It seems very odd to me.
So saying that we think that the Home Office would indeed have had a mass spectrometer by the 80s and therefore would have had the equipment necessary to tell what that gel was, why couldn't they identify it? Maybe it was foreign. Maybe it was a homemade concoction. Maybe they just didn't try very hard. I think they probably could have identified, and I couldn't find this information, so I can't say, but I think with even with mass spectrometry, they would have been able to identify the kind of individual components of what made up this gel. But I think what they couldn't do was put together the formulation and say, hey, this was Vaseline, or hey, this was Pseudocreme. They couldn't match it to a formulation that was out there on the market. Right. I think that's the problem. But we've gone off track. So 3 days after going missing, he suffers these burns. Then 2 days later, he dies and he's found in the coal yard. But it's not obvious to me at all how he got up on top of that pile of coal. The investigation felt like the lack of disturbance makes it hard to see how anyone else could have dumped him up there. But I don't buy the whole no one walked up the coal.
The other explanation, in inverted commas, was that there was a train track running by the coal pit. Was he thrown from a train? But I feel like probably not, because then he's going to have some sort of impact wounds on his body. He's going to have bruises, possibly broken bones. He's not going to be completely pristine. So that's pretty much the story. Let's have a crack at some theories, because I don't know about you, listeners at home, but I am feeling pretty confused. There is still no explanation for his disappearance, and we've certainly found that everything feels like it just doesn't quite fit. But so this is by all accounts, he had no enemies, he was of sound mind, pretty happy guy. His demeanour when leaving home that day on his potato hunt, he was like chatting to his neighbour, in pretty high spirits, he's going to a wedding the next day. So we're going to go straight in there and make it weird. The prevailing theory on the interwebs about this case is aliens. You heard me right. To Morden, the town in which Sigmund is found atop this coal heap, and the surrounding areas are apparently notorious for alien abductions. And it gets weirder. With the involvement of PC Alan Godfrey, who would himself go on to become an alien abductee, you couldn't write this shit. So, when you look at this case, Godfrey's story and the disappearance and death of Sigmund Adamski become inextricably linked.
So, what the hell was going on with Godfrey? In November 1980, so 6 months after Sigmund's body was found, Godfrey was on duty in the early hours of the morning, and he had been dispatched to check out the weird story of a herd of cows appearing and disappearing over an estate nearby. Is this just what happens to people who live in rural areas? They just act mental. Like, what the fuck? So anyway, a call comes in about these cows. He goes out to check it out. And on his drive there, Godfrey sees on the road in front of him what he thinks to be an overturned bus. He thinks that there's been an accident because there's buses that ferry the miners around from shifts. So he rushes over. But when he gets near, he sees that it wasn't a bus at all. But in fact, it was an object hovering 5 foot off the ground.
Of course it was.
Oh, of course. So he runs back to his car and he tries calling for help, but to his surprise, neither his personal radio nor his dash radio were working. Not knowing what to do, he starts to sketch the object. I'd have got the fuck out of there. I wouldn't start to sketch it.
Okay.
Thoughts?
So, last night, so I've just moved into a new house. I woke up at about 1:30 in the morning, and there's a big bay window, and I swear to God, I thought I saw a shadow of a person.
No, Hannah, don't!
Like, looking in?
No.
And then I thought I saw this torch, like, so this person, this shadow person at the window, like flicking a torch up to my ceiling. I did what I never thought I would do. I got out of bed and I went outside to look.
I went outside. You went outside of, are you in a Scooby-Doo cartoon? What?
I could
just
stand
outside.
Look, yeah. It was a hedge.
Oh my God. That is the... When you watch a horror film, that is rule number one. Do not go outside.
Yeah, but I did. I did do that.
You've got some nerve right there. Is it because I would be the first person to die in a horror film, though? I wouldn't have gone outside. That's horrifying. I would have pulled the duvet over my head and just pretended it wasn't there and pretended to be asleep. I wonder what that says about our life coping mechanisms. I wouldn't have gone out there. Fuck. Fucking hell, no way.
I never thought I would have gone, but I was like, I can't have that looking at me and not know what it
was. I'm not having it.
Don't worry about it, it was a hedge.
I mean, what if it just left by the time you walked out there?
I mean, we'll find out tonight, won't we?
Oh, don't. Jesus. Right, that's horrifying. Back to Godfrey and his life drawing lesson that he's conducting in the middle of the road. So
his extraterrestrial life drawing.
Exactly. So he's sketching away and then he apparently looks down to continue his sketch, looks back up, and the strange craft has vanished. Godfrey's story gets even weirder. He said with the craft now gone, he looked around and he saw that he was actually no longer even stood in the same spot where he had stopped. He was apparently now a full quarter of a mile further down the road. And stranger still, he said when he looked at his watch, despite that it had felt to him like it had just been a few minutes since he'd stopped, he had lost over half an hour.
Oh, bollocks. No, he hadn't.
Was he drunk?
I mean, yeah, because that's happened to me before. I've lost hours.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just before we started recording, talking about Friday, I lost hours. What the hell was I talking about?
You were comedy gold, though. It was so good.
Oh, God. It's all right. It was only with friends, so it's okay. Also, I don't want to cast aspersions on this man. Maybe something did happen to him. We don't know. But this is pretty weird.
Apparently, the soles of his police boots had split at the toe, like he had been dragged along the ground. After this incident, I assume, not knowing what to make of it, he found some colleagues to help look for the cows.
I like how he just goes straight back to work. He's like, oh, got my sketch. Deal with this later.
All in a day's work. Alien abduction.
Put that here.
Losing half an hour.
Chuck that on the later base.
Gotta find them fucking cows, though.
Let's go find the cows.
And they were found, the mystery cows, in a field that was only accessible through a locked gate. And despite the rain-soaked ground, no hoof prints surrounded them.
Cows are sneaky.
Surely if it's raining, that it's just gonna... If it's, like, properly raining, it's gonna erase any hoof prints anyway.
I don't know, Hannah. Are you a farmer?
Surely.
Or a rural police officer?
I am a cow expert. I have a PhD in bovine studies.
Oh. And in that PhD, you specifically cover how the hoof prints of a cow reacts with rain-sodden dirt. That's an interesting syllabus.
Yeah, I actually did my thesis on it. It was called, Cloven Hooves, a Mystery?
The best PhD titles have question marks in them. Moving on. Is this more lying for your CV? Because if that's what got you that job in that bovine shoe factory...
the bovine research centre that I...
Then you've just fucking outed yourself, mate.
Anyway. Godfrey reported what had happened to him the night before.
Okay, would you report this?
Would I report that I lost half an hour and then my shoes broke and I thought I was half a mile down the road? No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, I'd probably just leave it.
I'd just write it up to experience.
Exactly. I do that to a lot of things. I'm like, well, that'll teach you. Chalk that up to experience. Moving on.
So yeah, he did tell his police friends and found that another driver on the same road, only 3 miles further along, had seen a strange white light in the sky and reported this to the police as well. Now, 2 weeks passed and somehow Godfrey's report was leaked to the press. He was no crackpot. He was, in fact, an outstanding officer. He had previously even received 2 commendations for his police work. But not being able to take the looks and whispers, he quit the police force. And some years later, he was hypnotised and recounted the same case in the same way. When questioned about the death of Adamski, Godfrey said it was one of the weirdest cases he had ever heard of. And whilst despite his own encounter, he couldn't be sure that aliens were involved, but he couldn't rule it out either.
Okay, there's also another extended version of the weirdness in which he recounts when he's hypnotised. So Godfrey, in a previous accident, during a tussle as a police officer, he had had one of his testicles quite severely injured. Yes, which had stopped. I like that you leant in once I said that. You were like fiddling about, and then as soon as I said he got one of his testicles punched in, you were like, oh, tell me more.
That's my go word.
There was like even a little hand to the chin and a lean in. But
I said, tell me more.
So this happens. And then, really sadly for him, and for his wife, he stops being able to perform sexually. That's a bit of a bummer, you know? But after that night with the aliens, he's suddenly...
Stop it.
Ready to go. And when all this comes out later, under the hypnosis, blah, 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 his wife and him swear that... Well, his wife says that's what he thinks made him be able to perform again. And he says that that's what made him be able to perform again.
So the aliens fixed his dick.
Yeah. Like he was abducted so they could fix his dick. Is that what aliens are now doing? Just roaming around the English countryside, abducting rural townsfolk to solve them of their impotence? I don't know. Why?
I really hope so.
Why would they do that? It was just an interesting fact that I didn't have time to type up when we were researching this, but I thought it was quite interesting. I just thought, this is also fucking nuts. But we started now, why not just go full nuts? We will come back to real theories about this, by the way, guys. So now, this is where the real theories kind of begin. And perhaps in an unusual place, because 25 years later, the British UFO Research Association, that's right, BUFORA, the investigators from this organisation looked into the case. And to be honest, they did it with a lot of credibility. They wanted to debunk it. They didn't want this kind of crackpot nonsense hanging around their credible work. But of course, they weren't allowed access to any of the actual case information. It's still an open case, after all. I always find with this case, I feel like it happened way longer ago than it did. This was the 1980s. This wasn't that long ago. What they were able to do, though, was interview Adamski's family. Sigmund was supposed to attend his goddaughter's wedding the day after he disappeared. He was even supposed to walk her down the aisle. Now, the general feeling at the time was that why would he disappear with such an important event the next day? He had been looking forward to it, right? Well, the BUFORA investigators now found, when they were interviewing Adamski's family, that this had not in fact been the case, that he wasn't in fact looking forward to his goddaughter's wedding, because there'd been a family feud, and a female relative had even moved into the Adamski's house. This relative had taken out a restraining order against her husband and moved out. Had this woman's estranged husband abducted Sigmund? Did he have something to do with Sigmund's disappearance and his death? Had he potentially abducted him, kept him locked up, poured acid on him, burnt him, tortured him, and this leads to Sigmund having a heart attack, so the kidnapper just dumps him? I mean, after Sigmund disappeared, Lottie's first thought was that he had been kidnapped. But then also saying that, yes, of course you would want to think that something really terrible had happened to your husband and he hadn't just, like, run away. Our question still wonders, why? Was the estranged husband jealous? Did he perhaps think that Sigmund and his wife were having an affair? But then if he had abducted him, why was Sigmund so well fed? You don't kidnap someone, torture them, but then feed them, shave them and wash them. And also a really weird thing in this is that there were no ligature marks found on Sigmund's body. And still the question remains, why dump him in the coal pile in broad daylight and just increase your risk of being caught?
But there are still, like, so many issues. Adamski was just a bystander in this feud. He's not a protagonist. What could have taken him and torturing him accomplished? And if he's got new ligatures, he's not being held against his will. He's not being bound. He's not fighting anyone, it would seem. And then why has he been undressed? Why bother trying to help to heal the burns? And why dump his body somewhere so odd in daylight? Why not just in a field in the woods? And why not do it at nighttime?
Yeah, I don't feel like that theory.
I think, though, people do die falling down coal piles. It's a thing.
Why was he in there, though?
Well, I think if it's obviously a mining area, if you're in a panic and you've got... So let's say he's had a heart attack and whoever had him wasn't expecting him to have one, so they need to get rid of him. And they're in their, like, panic state. Their first thought is, oh my God, let's just put him on top of a coal pile and then it'll look like he fell down.
But why would it look like he fell down when he was at the top of the coal pile in a locked coal yard?
Maybe they thought he was going to slide down it and he just didn't.
Maybe we're looking at this wrong and thinking that somebody put him up there. What if Adamski was fleeing from someone and he was running and he finds an empty, abandoned, locked up coal yard? He's a coal miner. Maybe he knows. I know it's not the one he worked at, but he finds a way in. He gets into the coal yard. If I was being pursued, hey, maybe I would try find the highest spot you could get to. Maybe he tries to climb the coal pile and he tries to hide at the top. But in that panic, in that scrambling to climb this 12-foot coal pile, he gets to the top and has a heart attack and dies up there. And whoever was pursuing him doesn't find him. And then Trevor comes and opens up at 3:45 and then finds the body.
Yeah, but if he falls at all, he would have had a bruise. And he didn't.
But he might not have fallen. If he climbed up there to hide, say he's like running from somebody, sneaks in, climbs up the coal pile, is hiding up there, has a heart attack and dies from the overexertion. But then the question is, who is he running from and where had he been for 5 days?
People who believe the alien theory think aliens took Sigmund and held him in suspended animation, which is why he looked well-fed and clean and lacking a beard. And when they woke him up, he was so shocked that he had a heart attack and died.
I mean, that would be the natural reaction.
What, to have a heart attack and die? Yeah, probably. But then why were his wallet and watch and shirt missing? What would aliens want with a wallet and a watch and a shirt of a Yorkshireman? That doesn't make any sense. And why leave any mystery at all? Surely just take it with you. Is it guilt? Is it remorse? It just doesn't really make any sense.
I don't know. The more I think about it, I quite like my theory of he was up there hiding, but I still don't have an answer as to why he was hiding from somebody and where he had been for 4 days before that. There are a couple more theories, which we'll go through, but still, I don't feel like any of them really satisfactorily answer all of the problems with this case. The other theory was that maybe while he was out picking potatoes, he had a stroke. And then some nice people saw him have a stroke. He couldn't speak. They didn't know who he was, so they took him in. And then he died of a heart attack. And then they dumped his body. And the reason he was well-fed and well-groomed was because they were looking after him all that time. But in this case, why wouldn't you just take him to the hospital? Why would you just take in a random person you found in a potato field who'd had a stroke? And also, strokes, they would have known in the autopsy, I think, if he'd had a stroke.
Almost 100%. So another one, and I did quite like this one for like a hot minute before inevitably it fell apart. Sigmund was actually getting acupuncture for a back and neck problem. And this acupuncture method also used fire. So it involved putting cotton balls inside bamboo tubes and pressing them against the skin and lighting this on fire. So could this explain the burns? That's what cupping is, isn't it? I've seen it. They just look like hickeys. They don't look like burns.
No, I think cupping is just like where it's like it draws the blood up there. So it's like, you know how some people do those stupid things to their lips where they put it over their lips and then it pulls all the blood in and then it's like pouty. That's, I think, what cupping is, where it just does that. So it draws the blood to that area.
There definitely is fire involved with that, though.
Oh, is there? I don't, with I mean, cupping, I've yeah, never
because
had
it creates a vacuum and with the fire and that's what sucks the skin
out. Oh, no, I don't know. This method that I read about was with bamboo tubes and with cotton wool and like cotton balls and like actually setting them on fire against and then pushing them onto the skin.
Either way, he was still alive for 5 days. So how long is this fucking acupuncture session? Like, is it a retreat, an acupuncture retreat?
Exactly. He got the burns, what, 2-3 days after he went missing?
So he can't have just gone for this rogue impromptu acupuncture session when he went on his potato hunt. That doesn't make any sense. And he died after 5 days. So someone held him captive for 4 days and then he's free. And then he's like, you know what, before I go back to my wife who's got MS, I'm just going to get some acupuncture first.
It just makes no sense. Another theory that seems plausible at first. Back, neck, acupuncture, fire. But what? It still makes no sense. Because of the timeline of when he got the burns, when he went missing and when he died. Still don't get it. So the other theory that is one that people do like to talk about on the internet. I still don't quite get this, but let's talk about it. Was Sigmund leading a double life? Was he having an affair? Now, there was loads of drama in the family due to the wedding and the relative being in the house. And he's got this sick wife. Was he just like, fuck this, I'm going to go have sex with my girlfriend. And he has a heart attack. He dies. She dumps the body. Anyone could have an affair. He's a 56-year-old Polish coal miner that lives in Yorkshire. Like, is he having an affair? And by all accounts, he really loved his wife. And I know that doesn't mean that he might not have been having an affair. But like, when she first got diagnosed with MS and she was getting worse, he tried to get his job to release him and retire him early so he could stay home and look after her. And does that sound like the kind of man who's also... I mean, he might have. It might have been an escape. But that's not the point because I don't know his character. What I'm saying is, if you were going to have an affair with somebody, why would you go out pretending to go buy potatoes or pick potatoes and then disappear? That is going to draw so much fucking attention to your affair. Wouldn't you just be like, I'm off for an international coal mining potato picking conference. Back in 5 days, see ya, go have your affair. Who would just fucking disappear and then expect that your sick wife and your goddaughter, whose wedding you've just not turned up to, wouldn't be looking for you? That seems a weird time to go have an affair. And even if he did, what, he just dies and this person he's having an affair with drags his body to the top of a coal pile and leaves him there? I still don't get it.
Did he fall into a coal truck and get delivered? But Trevor was adamant that there was no delivery that day, certainly not while he was out, and the body was totally clean, so he can't have been, like, rolling around in a coal truck. And he was well-fed until that point. So also, how would he have ended up in a coal truck if he's totally clean?
See, that theory doesn't make any sense either.
No, and then there's another theory that's to do with the spontaneous fires that sometimes start within coal piles, and the smoke is highly toxic.
I mean, according to Reddit, this can sometimes happen. And I guess if you inhaled enough of the smoke, if one of these spontaneous fires started within a coal pile, but where was he still for 5 days? And even if it was the smoke, then he's not, like, trapped in a room. He's out in the open. I mean, it would explain the burns and the heart attack, maybe.
It wouldn't explain the, like, healing.
No, exactly. Healing. And the burn marks, they happened days before his death, so it doesn't make sense. It would be like he was just lying around in a pile of coal for 5 days while someone fed him and washed him and shaved him. Like, I don't get it. I actually think that I think he was fleeing. I can't say from what, where he had been all that time, why someone had kept him, or where he'd been hiding, because he wasn't living rough and he wasn't in captivity, quote unquote. Like, no one had him tied up and starving him. And the burn marks seem more of an accident because of the gel applied to them.
Oh, I hadn't thought of it like that. It could be an accident. Do you know what? I'm leaning more towards, I mean, obviously the disposal of the body is bonkers and there's lots of things that don't really make sense, but I am leaning towards a double life and something just went wrong and someone, like, did a bad job of getting rid of the body.
Okay, why dump him on top of a coal pile? That seems like a lot of effort to go to. But it was something I said to you before we started recording. Maybe it was because they thought, we'll dump him on top of this coal pile. There'll be another delivery. He'll get covered up with another pile of coal. But then, like I said though, that coal, it's not like dumping someone into the concrete, into the foundations of a house, and then it will be filled up with concrete, or into a grave and then they'll put another body over it. That's like coal ready to be sold. You're eventually going to find that body. Wouldn't it be better to just take him out to some woods and bury him in a shallow grave? Even that doesn't make any sense to me now.
I think if there had been another coal delivery and his body was found in amongst the pile of coal, then it would be much easier to believe that he slipped and fell and was avalanched to death by coal. Like, I think that would be...
Maybe, but he still was missing for 5 days. That still wouldn't have been explained. And also, he didn't work in this coal pit. So what was he even doing there?
Yeah, that's true.
He worked in a coal pit 20 miles away. This is the one case where I feel like I genuinely have no answer that is satisfactory enough in my mind to make it feel like, yeah, that's good enough. Every story, every theory has a hole in it with this.
I know, I completely agree. It's incredibly frustrating.
I actually don't know.
But if you know, let us know on the Facebook group, which has been really active recently, which is really great. We love hearing your theories, so really get your teeth into this one because there's a lot you can do with it.
And there's a great community over there. We were saying this is absolutely the most exciting part of doing a podcast like this, is watching the community you guys are building around it. So thank you so much. Head over to the Facebook group, join in the conversation. I'm really excited to see what you guys think about this. And if you are listening to this early on Patreon, don't do too many spoilers before the Thursday when everyone else hears it. And if you would like to have early access to episodes, maybe get hold of some stickers and some t-shirts and whatnot from us, then maybe, if you can, head over to the Patreon page, take a look. For even a dollar, you can get some fun stuff out of us.
And we'll see you next.
Bye.
Goodbye.